The NRL season begins tomorrow night in Melbourne when the Storm and the Broncos meet. It's been a wretched off-season. It's seen unprecedented action from the governing body in Australian sport. And Todd Greenberg, in a moment's time, will join me in the Sydney studio to dissect what's happened, what's been done, and what lies ahead for that code. A flurry of discussion around runners, which we'll pick up in a moment. But on a more serious note, there's an air of concern that's clearly growing around Dylan Robertson after what took place on Sunday. He's had medical testing after being unsteady in the aftermath of that JLT game. So wonky was the word that was associated with it. But the initial medical testing has linked that feeling to the heart issue that he suffered last year, and that removed him from the game for the rest of the season. There's still further testing to be done, but the question now sits heavily not only over what this year might hold for Robertson, but what his football future holds. So concern at St Kilda, which was very clear on Monday, is intensifying through the testing that he has undergone since Sunday. It is Geelong Cats membership day today. You can purchase a 6-game Cats home and away membership for the price of a 3-game membership. Ange is with me in... Where are you calling in from, Ange?
From Croydon, Jared.
Welcome aboard. Very well.
Thank you. Thank you, mate. That's really sad news about Dylan Robertson. Just thought I'd throw that in. Jared, that's 6-6-6. Blighty's worried about the runners not coming out. Well, he's talking about more about there's going to be more goals kicked. So if there's more goals kicked, Jared, that means that the runners can come after each goal. So it's almost going to be like the same anyway. And if you go by the Port Adelaide-North Melbourne game and also the Adelaide Crows and Port Adelaide game, they were very high-scoring games. So I think you're going to have runners out there quite regularly. That's what I think anyway.
Regularly enough. And yes, well, as I say, this is actually to all be tested when we get to the real stuff. So we wait to see. Blighty's, he's held sway. Oh, Malcolm, don't always agree, but you have been a fresh air this morning. Thank you. Thank God for Malcolm Blight. That's from Johnny Mack. So much sense from Blighty on the runner, Jason in Geelong. Finally, Blighty is talking sense. Keep the runners off the grounds. Let the players work it out, and we might see more spontaneous play and less robotic play. So that's pushing back the other way. You'd think you have before the game, quarter time, half time, three quarter time to be the messenger. Another forward can pass a message on. It's rocket science. Blighty and the like. It's going to be the worst thing. It's like players don't know how to play or something. Shaking my head. Malcolm, take off your coach's hat, rerunners. Might be beneficial for coaches, but very unsightly for supporters. That's from Charles in Blackburn. And David in Newport should have the last word on this. Malcolm has given the most cogent reason why the 50-metre rule should be scrapped forthwith. The AFL needs to rebut what he says or do what he says. It's that straightforward. Tim's in Craigieburn. Hello, Tim.
How you going, Jared? How's things?
Very well.
Great show.
Cheers.
Just on the runners, is it allowed to have, like, instead of having runners on the ground, are the teams allowed to have people around the ground, around the boundary, instructing?
Shouting messages. I think the players would look after that themselves, wouldn't they?
Yep. No, it's just on the other side of the boundary, just like
yeah.
It's marked up to the coach, so no, they can scream out across the ground.
Yeah, that suggestion has been made on a couple of occasions as to how Chinese whispers around the boundary to get the message on. There's a couple of good ones around megaphones and the like. Well, I'll ask Nick Riewoldt about it a little later on as well. He's been in the guise of Luke Hodge. He's been the on-field coach. What the reality of that is like, what the drawbacks are, either individually or collectively. We'll come back to this conversation as the morning unfolds. Todd Greenberg is in the studio, the chief executive of the NRL in Sydney. Todd, welcome to SCN.
Thanks for having me on the show. Really nice to talk to you.
So tomorrow night's the season opener. What does that represent to you? Is it the circuit breaker you're looking for? Is it a relief to get footy underway? Is it a pause in what's been a really challenging time?
Well, it certainly has been a challenging time, and there's probably no one more excited than I to see the games kick off tomorrow night. And, you know, we're expecting a wonderful first round of rugby league, and I think I speak for all of our fans who've said it's been a very, very difficult couple of months for our sport, but we are looking forward to actually talking about the game, and tomorrow night will signal that for us.
So we'll come back to that. Is Todd, how challenging have you found the off-season?
Incredibly challenging. Certainly the most challenging period of time for me in my relatively decent time working in rugby league. You know, we've faced some very serious issues for the sport, and we've had to make some really distinct changes, some policy changes to the rules, which are stark and different and probably put us out differently to every other sport in this country. But we've done that with one prism and one thing in mind, which is a protective jurisdiction of the game. And I think what we've done is right, despite it potentially not being very popular.
What in your mind was the tipping point that it really was time to act?
Oh, look, I think the game has been able to withstand a number of off-field incidents over decades, but what I've seen in the last couple of months are very, very serious criminal charges, some of the things the game may not have seen. And I think we need to align that also with continued understanding of communities' expectations. And you can't put your head in the sand and hope these things go away. You have to put a protective jurisdiction, as I said, on the game. And as leaders of the sport, you quite often have to make policy changes and ultimately changes to the rules which give you that protection. And that's what we've had to do over these last few months. But to answer the question, I think it is the very serious nature of some of the things we're facing, some things that really go to the reputation and brand of the game.
How are you able to measure the damage that it was doing reputationally and then what it was doing to the connection of say, mum and dad fans to the game?
Yeah, look, that's a good question, because having to understand and measure that success can be both short and long term. We look at it through a number of lenses. I mean, a lot of people think that my responsibility and the Commission's responsibility is primarily related to the NRL Telstra Premiership. And whilst that's obviously what most people see week to week, our responsibilities are much greater than that and much broader than that. We have a huge amount of work and energy and resources into junior participation. You know, we've got literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of young boys and girls that play our sport. And we understand that participation for us long term is very important. And we all know that those decisions get made on the perception of our sport. So that's one lens we look through. Clearly, we have independent research around brand. We do an NPS, a Net Promoter Score, on our brand monthly and weekly through our clubs. And we also clearly talk to people who are investing in the game. And when I say investors, I talk primarily about our two broadcast partners at Channel 9 and Fox Sports, and equally our key corporate partners, you know, people like Telstra and others who invest significantly in the game. And when you invest in the game, it actually means you believe in the game, and that means everything that the game stands for. So occasionally when you're tested as leaders, we have to stand up straight and do what we think is best for the game.
And then bring people with you. So how would you categorise the reaction to what you've done? So the implementation now of the no-fault stand-down rule, is it seems you can read that the extremes look like this has been a long time coming, and then you've overreached, you've overreacted and impinged basic legal rights of an individual.
Yeah, and that's the commentary. And Jared, that's exactly what we had assumed the commentary would be. You know, I'd make a couple of points to you. First of all, the game is much bigger than any one person. And whilst it's important to say that we're making absolutely no judgment on the guilt or innocence of any one particular player, we do have to put steps in place to protect the long-term future of the game. So the policy, I think, enables us to stand down a player without judging their guilt or innocence. I mean, purposely set as a no-fault stand down until that court hearing is completed. That may take some time, but we are talking about very serious criminal offences, some of these which carry a penalty of, you know, 11 years or more. And when those things now come through our rules, there is no discussion on the no-fault stand-down. It is something that will be carried out according to the rules. Now, that's new for us. It's new for any sport in this country, to be fair. But I think it's the right answer, given what this game's been going through. We had to make change. We had to use this crisis as an opportunity to make distinct change.
Do you expect it to survive the full hearing of the federal court?
Well, I mean, everyone's entitled to put forward their views. That's the society of which we live in. Clearly, as you would imagine, we've done our homework. And, you know, we will vigorously defend the game's principles and the game's right to protect its brand and reputation.
Does the responsibility weigh heavily on you, Todd, as what you've outlined? There are prescriptive, but there's also discretionary, isn't there, that sits with your office?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, people ask that question about why the discretionary powers effectively for the CEO of the game. I think it's right and just to be able to give us the required powers through our rules and laws in order to protect the game again. And we will, I would understand that we will use this sparingly. I hope I never have to use it at all, yeah, to be quite frank. But when those issues confront us, particularly issues that relate to women and children and violence, we will use them. Because again, we understand that the brand and reputation of our sport is important. And I say this regularly, that we enjoy huge profile. We enjoy, as a sport, the ability, particularly on the Eastern Seaboard, and particularly in Sydney and Brisbane, you know, we enjoy huge profile and support for the game. When you open up the Daily Telegraph in Sydney or the Courier Mail or the Sydney Morning Herald, you have to wade through sometimes 8 and 10 and 12 pages of rugby league before you get to the next topic. And we don't take that for granted. And we enjoy that huge amount of saturated coverage for the sport. Now, in saying that, when you get it right and you've got lots of good things to talk about, that's a significant positive. But equally, you can't enjoy those benefits if at the same time you are not a realist to understand that when you have difficult issues or when players actually put their foot out of the crease and create difficult headlines, we have to confront those. And that's being a realist in the 24-hour media cycle that we work in. So we go in with our eyes wide open. We enjoy the opportunity to promote the game through its profile and brand, but equally, we have to be satisfying ourselves that when we have difficult moments, we have to confront them head on.
How much thought have you put into why? Why the spate of incidents in rugby league? Is it cultural? How much thought have you tried to find in the underlying cause?
Yeah, and that's where our attention is really turning to, Jared. I mean, while we are also, you know, keen to protect the brand and do all the things, you know, punitively that we need to do, clearly we need to understand how we can be better as a sport. And, you know, in simple terms, rugby league's got a lot of growing up to do. And that's not just aimed at the players. It's aimed at all of the people that work inside the sport. When I'm asked continually, you know, who's our biggest competitor, I think most people want me to say that it's the AFL, and I don't say that. I say our biggest competitor comes from within. Our biggest opportunity to grow and succeed, and the obstacle to that, will come from within the sport. We have to do some growing up. We have to consider the amount of money we spend in education and understand, is that the right spend and is it in the right areas? And if it's not, use this as an opportunity to pivot differently. I think we need to attract better people into our clubs and to leadership positions. And we need to continue to hold ourselves to account, understanding that whilst everyone has their team and everybody has the colours of which they will support each week, the sport requires a broader discussion. And we're not perfect here. We're not going to get everything right. But what I hope you hear through this interview and what fans and, you know, lovers of rugby league understand through this discussion is we will do everything we possibly can to give ourselves the best chance at success.
So how much energy goes into the education around alcohol and around either the perception or the culture of binge drinking?
Yeah, I think this is a big discussion topic, probably not just for the National Rugby League, but for a lot of parts of society and certainly professional sports. We need to understand the environments of which our players are training and playing in. We need to understand the leadership inside of those environments. And we also understand the accountability that goes with being an NRL player. You know, I've said consistently over the last couple of weeks this, that a lot of players come in and they sign, you know, significant contracts. There's a lot of money in the game, as there should be, because these players are full-time professional. In saying that, though, their responsibilities aren't just about the 80 minutes that they play each weekend. They've got enormous responsibility and accountability to be the type of people away from rugby league that there's an expectation to be. And if people think that's either unfair or unjust, then there's a simple answer to that. Don't sign a contract. If you're going to sign an NRL contract, there are big responsibilities that go with it, and expectations are big. And it's a a different and complex world of which we all live in. Social media and digital media and our phones are ever present, and there are dangers that go with that, but our players go in with their eyes wide open.
Every sporting organisation in the country was looking towards what you would do, and I suspect in what comes next. Have you had any active conversations with other chief executives, any feedback from around the sporting landscape?
Yeah, we have. You know, and I've got deep and solid relationships with each of my counterparts. As I said earlier, I think people like to think that we're at real loggerheads with our counterparts, particularly the NRL and the AFL, who generate the income and the eyeballs, particularly through the winter codes. But the reality is that, you know, Gil McLachlan and I have developed a strong and deep relationship and friendship, I'd like to call it, and we have huge mutual respect for each other's sports. And when one of us is being challenged, it's not uncommon for the other one to reach out and have a discussion and share some of our common challenges. You know, it's said regularly that in any leadership position, you can be quite isolated, and there's not many people who will understand some of the challenges when we're confronted with it. So we speak regularly, and we share a lot of insight. You know, recently I asked Gil to address our club chief executives who were meeting in Melbourne for a quarterly conference, and he was quite happy to do it, and as I would be with him at some point in the future, because, you know, at the end of the day, we are all competing, but also there are so many other offerings outside of live sport. I think there's a lot of learnings and a lot of things we can do together to grow our collective sports.
Do you think if the no-fault stand-down rule serves the NRL well and withstands the challenges, do you think it might become commonplace across sport in Australia?
Look, that's a difficult one to answer at the moment, but what I would say is that leaders of sports like I and others need to have a very close eye on expectations of our communities and understanding that that's shifting and changing. There's no doubt about that. People have an expectation of elite athletes, you know, leaders in business, politicians, and there's significant onus on us to make sure that we behave in a manner that is responsible and suitable for those community standards. And when that doesn't happen, we should be held to account. And I think the rules and policies that the Commission have been brave enough to bring forward allow that protective jurisdiction for rugby league. And I think we needed it, and I'm pleased we have it.
I don't want to make this about any one individual, but were you relieved that the injunction hearing that was scheduled for Jack DeBellin tomorrow to be able to play in the first part of the season is not going ahead?
Well, look, I'd answer that by simply saying that, you know, Thursday should be all about rugby league on the field, and I'm pleased that we won't be devoting column inches to an injunction hearing, but we'll be devoting all of those column inches back to the game on the field starting in Melbourne Thursday. So in that respect, I'm glad that our fans more broadly can be actually reading, watching, focusing and digesting everything that's good about the game, which is the 80 minutes on the field.
Cameron Smith expressed the view late last week that he thinks the Storm Premiership should be reinstated from the salary cap scandal. Does he have a point?
Look, I did hear Cameron's views. They're not new to me. Cameron and I have a good relationship, and we talk regularly and often about a range of topics in the game. But I think the short answer to that question is it happened a long time ago. I wasn't in the NRL at that time. I didn't make those decisions. It's hard for me to retrospectively go back and look at it, and I don't have any plans to do so.
Were they treated differently to what's happened subsequently and what happens on your watch?
Look, again, that's hard for me to say because I don't know the intricacies of that particular one. But what I would say is that I have tried to, in my time in dealing with salary cap scandals, hold people to account, but also understand the impact that it has on the fans of those teams and the players of those teams. I have tried to bring sanctions down that are consistent with that way of thinking. It's hard for me to retrospectively understand what happened at Melbourne and then retrofit that to the future policies. I do understand, though, that there's a very passionate element from people like Cameron and others who have been through this period of time with the Storm and been through those damaged times for them. But my view is I can only look forward and I won't look back.
Why did you put the season opener in Melbourne tomorrow night?
Oh, well, that's a bit of a no-brainer, I think. I mean, while we've got some clear air and there's no AFL, we wanted to put our opening season game for the Storm and the Broncos, which historically has been an enormous contest between these two very proud clubs. So launching in Melbourne was fantastic, followed by, you know, traditional Sydney game of the Roosters and the Rabbitohs at the iconic SCG on Friday night. So having the city to ourselves, really, before the AFL kicks off is too good an opportunity to pass through. So delighted that we can kick off at Amy Park tomorrow night and give the Storm some real clear air to launch their season.
Todd, I really appreciate you coming into the studio and having the conversation. I hope we get to do it across the season.
Yeah, look forward to talking to you through, Gia. And again, thank you for your support. Rugby League never takes that support for granted, so we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. Todd Greenberg, the Chief Executive of the NRL, with me this morning after the most challenging of off-seasons and getting ready for the season opener tomorrow night. This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And always ahead, the new BMW 3 Series has arrived at Doncaster BMW.